Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss an article from the March issue of the Beef Watch newsletter titled Why Storage, Not Age, Determines Hay Quality. To have a conversation about this, I'm joined today by one of the authors, Ben Beckman, who's a Nebraska Extension educator based in the northeast part of the state. Thanks for joining me today, Ben.
Always happy to chat, Aaron.
Ben, this article is extremely timely as we record this podcast here in the middle of March. We've had a lot of hay carried over from last year and from 2025. That hay is now in a place where I think it's going to need to be used because of the dry conditions we've got across the state. I think there's going to be need to feed hay longer going into the spring. And then also, as we record this, a lot of the state's been impacted by a wildfire. And so we're going to need that hay to feed those cattle. In this article, you just talk about the importance of understanding how hay age is not necessarily a determiner of quality. Tell us more about that and why it's important to evaluate some of this hay that's been stored, maybe retest it to know what we've got.
Yeah, Aaron. So this article kind of came about because of some questions that we had received in at the office about just some older hay that folks had lying around and what was the quality of that and kind of diving into some of the details of that. And whenever I get that question in, you know, of course, the best thing that you can do if you have some hay that's a little bit older and you don't really know exactly how to use it or what the quality is to do, as you kind of said, you know, go ahead and get a hay test on it. That's going to be the surefire way to see what we actually have and what we're dealing with. But whenever I, you know, have someone ask a question like that, the first thing that I usually follow up with is more questions about, you know, where is this hay at? How is it being stored? Because when we start to really dive into the studies that have been done, looking at hay quality and looking at impact of storage on hay, it's not the age of the hay, it's the weathering and basically the decomposition of the hay that's really affecting the quality. When we're putting up hay, we are essentially trying to stop the clock on decomposition. Whenever we're putting up a forage, you know, whether that's silage, you know, in that case, we're putting into an anaerobic state and stopping microbes from decomposing. When we do hay, we're drying it out, getting it to a point where the moisture content is so low that microbes are no longer going to be decomposing it like they would if we just let that grass or alfalfa or whatever we have in that bale, you know, out in the natural environment and just left it spread out. And so how we have those microbes continued to be stopping, whether we get moisture back onto that bale and they start to decompose again, or whether we have that bale in a totally, you know, dry and isolated condition, really makes a difference when it comes to what the quality of that is versus exactly how long that bale's been there for.
Talk about the different ways that we can store hay and how that can really differentiate how quality lasts as we think about preserving hay.
Yeah. So when we're looking at storage, Aaron, the biggest thing is that moisture factor. And so, like I said, we're trying to get the hay to a dry point so microbes can no longer be decomposing. And so the best and ultimately top storage method when we're looking at ways to store hay is to, you know, put it inside under a roof and keep it from getting any moisture on it at all. And you can see that, you know, if you know anybody that puts up really high quality alfalfa hay, a lot of times, you know, they do have a storage shed and, you know, they're keeping it a fair distance so they can get airflow through that and keep those bales, you know, in humid conditions dried out still. You know, they're basically regulating the moisture around those hay bales. The type of bale that we have makes a big difference. Our large squares really need to be protected a lot more, say like a round bale would be, because those squares don't have that outer covering, and the way that they're put together, moisture penetrates into them a lot easier than they do in a round bale. And even when we're looking at round bales, the difference between grass hay and alfalfa hay in a round bale is different as well in how that sheds water and keeps precipitation from coming into it. So basically the big thing is how can we keep precipitation or moisture or anything from getting into that bale, whether it's putting it under storage, putting a tarp over it and keeping it dry that way, and then also keeping it up off the ground if we can do that as well, so we don't get moisture wicking up into the bale from the bottom.
As we think about hay that is out and that gets wet, it's not just the moisture content that the hay was put up at, but as you said, is it getting moisture on it? When that happens, what happens to hay quality?
So there's a lot of different things that tend to happen. The first thing that we usually look at is TDN, or measure of energy. And that really has to do with the soluble carbohydrates that are locked in those plants. And when the animal eats that, and it's either going through the gut or the rumen, you know, depending on what sort of animal's eating it, that's where a lot of those energy compounds are getting released from. But that's also what the microbes are using for energy, as well as you know, they're growing and basically decomposing that bale. And so TDN is usually where we see pretty steady drop when we have a bale that's exposed to weathering. So as soon as we get moisture in there, microbes, fungi, those sorts of things start to become active again, and they start to use those soluble carbohydrates as energy sources. And so that energy level in those bales starts to drop. Then they release that a lot of times as gas. And so that's why we see dry matter loss as well. So if you weigh a bale at the same moisture, you know, that's always the critical point here and difficult to do. But if you weighed a bale at the same moisture content that you had initially when you harvested it, and then if you left it outside for a season or a year and had it at the exact same moisture content and weighed it again, it's going to weigh less because that decomposition process released some of that energy as gas. And so it's, or leached it out through moisture or things like that. And so we actually have less bale. We have lower energy content that is pretty typical across the board. Now, when we look at things like crude protein content, things get a little bit more interesting, we should say. Crude protein doesn't behave in exactly the same way. Usually, the biggest loss that we see in that is through leaching or through physical loss. So, like if we've got an alfalfa bale, you know, leaf shatter, the leaves hold a lot of the protein content in alfalfa. And so, if we're moving those bales around, you know, we get that dust of the leaves that have been pretty much pulverized. And that leads to a loss of protein content. So, we can lose some in that way. But however, crude protein, as we measure it, is a percent of the total amount of that bale. And we just said that as a bale decomposes or weathers, it actually shrinks and we get, you know, less dry matter. And so we can actually run into circumstances where we have less protein loss than we lose dry matter from the bale. And we can actually sometimes increase crude protein content just because the total percentage of protein in that, and it's kind of counterintuitive, but the total percentage of protein hasn't really dropped that much compared to how much we've lost in dry matter and energy and things like that. So crude protein can be a little bit different and interesting. The one really big caveat to that is sometimes we can have heating. So when that bale gets warm, either through microbial activity or fungi or things like that, as it's decomposing, those proteins can be denatured. And so we can run into a point where we basically get a browning reaction, and the protein no longer is going to be able to be useful to the animal, but it's still there. It's just in a different shape and form. And so our typical protein test will pick it up and still count it as protein. But we have to do a heat damage protein test basically to show, yeah, they're here, but they're not usable for the animal to actually have during digestion and be useful to the animal. So through a lot of things there. So just kind of to wrap it up in a nutshell, whenever we have weathering of a bale, we usually have dry matter loss. We have a loss of energy or TDN. Protein content can stay the same, might drop a little bit, might actually increase a little bit. But what we really want to look at from a protein standpoint is to make sure that we didn't have any heating, so we're overcounting the protein that's actually there.
Ben, as we think about feeding some of this hay that's been around for a couple years, in some cases there's a significant amount of deterioration. What are some things we need to know in terms of feeding that to cattle, some things we should be aware of?
Yeah, Aaron, that's a really good point. You know, when we think about how we use these bales, again, testing them is always going to be the best way to kind of determine quality. If we've got something that's really well weathered, we do have a potential for having things like mold. You know, there's bacteria, a lot of fungi that are going to be in the outer layer of those bales just from the decomposition part. And so need to keep an eye out. You know, a lot of times we don't have things like mycotoxins or stuff show up, but if we do get some weird colors, always something to run a test for or have something that you're a little bit questionable about. But a lot of times animals aren't going to really enjoy that hay. They might have some refusal from it, especially if we give them a chance to sort, if we're feeding it by rolling that bale out or putting it into a feeder or something like that. And so there's some trade-offs. Yeah, they're not going to consume as much, but they're going to get the more high quality parts of it and actually, utilize the better part of the bale. So just how we feed that can be an important thing. And then just considering also, you know, when, especially when we're looking at round bales, the outer portion of that round bale, and, you know, I'm not great at math, doing all the geometry and stuff on it, but if you really dive into the numbers, the outer proportion of it is a lot more as the diameter shrinks, we get, you know, less of that actual bale in there as it starts to get smaller. You can think of that as like a toilet paper roll or a paper towel roll. You know, it goes pretty slow on the outside until you start to get closer and closer to the middle. And then all of a sudden, one, two sheets and you're done pretty quickly. Same thing with our round bales. And so there's a lot more weathered area on the outside of those round bales than there is on the inside core. And so when we're taking tests on it, sometimes we can overestimate the quality just a little bit because we're taking a probe in and we're just getting a little bit of that outside and getting more of the inside good core. Not necessarily something that's going to impact, you know, whether or not we should test those bales, but something for us to consider as we go about thinking about how we want to feed these, especially when we have, you know, again, lower quality bales. Is there something that we can find use to it? Just being aware of the sorting and some of these little idiosyncrasies can be important.
Ben, anything else on this topic you'd like to highlight as we point towards wrapping up?
You know, Aaron, I think that one really cool thing that when we started discussing this topic, and I was chatting with Jerry Valesky, who's our forage specialist there at North Platte, he shared, and this is part of the article, if you jump on our beef.unl.edu website, someone had brought in a square bale that they had stored in a barn up there in the middle of the sand hills. They weren't exactly sure that the time period that it was put up, but it was somewhere in that 1945, 1950 time range. And so it's been sitting in a barn untouched, you know, since the 1950s there. And so he took some core samples and, you know, sent it into a lab. Just, you know, let's see what it looks like. And we have those on the webpage there. It's really interesting when you look at it, you know, the TDN compared to a 2024 sample and somewhat similar part of the sandhills there. TDN content wasn't that far off. We had some differences in crude protein content. You know, some of that had to do with, I'm sure, the year that it was put up and the plant material and what we actually had in there versus decomposition. But a lot of those numbers really didn't change that much. And so I think that's just a really good illustration. If we can keep something dry and keep it protected, you know, even something that's going to be, you know, 70, 75 years old can still maintain quality. It's just all about how we store it is really the big thing versus the age.
Ben, thanks for your time today and for putting this article together. Again, I think it's very timely in light of the circumstances we're dealing with. As we look at what's happening across the state, there's going to be a lot of hay, I think, going to be used here the rest of this spring and summer because of the conditions we're dealing with. So thanks for your time and for putting this together.
No, always happy to chat, Aaron.
For more information on the article we did discuss in today's Beef Watch podcast, as Ben mentioned earlier, you can find it at beef.unl.edu. The title of the article, Why Storage, Not Age, Determines Hay Quality.